Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, we like to talk with Stan Temple at this time of the year. He's a professor emeritus in the U.S. Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the UW-Madison, senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation, and here to talk about the effects of climate and weather on seasonal events and tell us about the 2021 phenology calendar. It's a great one. Want to be part of the conversation? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Stan Temple, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, this will be the 10th year that we've done this interview around this time of year.
Yeah, it's really great. I want to take a look first at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. How's the pandemic affected things there?
Well, like most public institutions, we're closed down for public visits, which is, of course, unfortunate because a lot of people do like to visit the Leopold Shack and the Leopold Center during the fall. But probably the biggest setback is that this year, because of the pandemic, we're not going to be hosting crane tours to view the 10,000-plus cranes that assemble as a staging area just behind Leopold Shack. This year we're doing it virtually, which will be a new experience.
Yeah, that's really, really too bad. And actually, I was looking at the 2021 phenology calendar, and I noted that this week in 2021, the center would be hosting its wildlife viewing, and hopefully in 2021 we'll be able to do that in person instead of virtually.
That would be nice. But if anyone wants to take in the spectacle of 10,000 cranes, you can do it virtually, as we're doing many events this year. You can go to the Aldo Leopold Foundation website, which is simply aldoleopold.org, and book yourself a reservation. I'll be doing the tours as I always do, only this time remotely. And this time we actually have some video cameras out on the islands where the cranes are roosting for the night. So,
so you get some real close-up views.
You get a real close-up view, and of course you can do it in the warmth and comfort of your home rather than being out in the cold blind.
Oh, man. Well, you and I have been doing this for 10 years now, but phenology's been around a lot longer than that. How long has phenology been around?
Well, I suppose you can take it all the way back to the Greeks, who really started noting the sort of predictability of when things happened each year. And, of course, even before that, obviously, our very distant ancestors were very in tune with the changing of the seasons. But the actual science of phenology, where people started to actually record the dates on which various events in nature happened, and think about them, dates back to the 19th century.
So it's still been around for a long time. What are some of the things phenologists track?
Well, the tradition, and I guess you would say it is mostly a tradition, is that you take note of the first occurrence of an event each year. So when you see the first blossoms of a particular plant flowering, that would be the data that you record. When you see the first arrivals of migratory birds that have been gone for the winter, or when you see them for the last time in the fall. So the emphasis has always been on sort of the first and the last observations of a particular event, but particularly focused on those first events. I guess we're so hungry for spring to arrive that the arrival of migratory birds and the blossoming of flowers is always something that we really look forward to.
Yeah, that's for sure. Why are these data so important, and how is it used? How are these data used?
Well, initially, phenology as a science started off basically as a mostly an agricultural type of interest, so that farmers knew the best times to plant and harvest and so forth. But throughout the 20th century, we've increasingly looked more at an ecological context for phenology, understanding how plants and animals have adapted themselves not only to long-term climatic changes, but also to just the weather events that happen during the year. And one of the pioneers, actually, in doing this was our own Aldo Leopold. He was, of course, a student growing up in Iowa in the late 19th century, and he was exposed in his schoolboy days to a national, I guess today we would say, environmental education program called the Nature Study Movement. And that movement encouraged students to get out of the classroom, go out into nature, make notes of the things they were seeing, and then come back into the classroom and try to make sense of what they'd observed. And one of the popular exercises was to keep phenological records in your neighborhood to note when things were happening. So Aldo Leopold got exposed to this as a very young boy, and he continued to do it for the rest of his life, but especially during his years here in Wisconsin in the second half of his life.
Yeah, and you know, you think about climate change and wondering how climate change may be reflected in these data.
Well, of course, climate change is real and is affecting Wisconsin, so it's not surprising that these data would reflect what we're seeing in terms of the climate, since many of these phenological events are, in fact, influenced by temperature. So as Wisconsin's climate has warmed, many, not all, but many of the events are happening earlier than they did in previous times, especially if you go back, for example, to Aldo Leopold's records from the 1930s. And it was much later, actually, when Aldo Leopold's oldest daughter, Nina Leopold Bradley, moved back to Wisconsin in retirement and built her retirement home just down the road from the Leopold Shack. And she resumed keeping phenological records as she had done as when she was a girl with her father. And like her father, after collecting those observations for a number of years, she started to see a pattern. And the pattern was that many of the events that she was recording were happening sometimes days or weeks earlier than they had back in the 1930s and 1940s, which would have been consistent with the fact that by that time, by the late 1990s, southern Wisconsin had already warmed up on average by almost 2 degrees Fahrenheit.
And, you know, as I was looking at the 2021 calendar, it kind of works the other way, too, looking at, for example, Lake Mendota in Madison, its earliest freeze-up was November 23rd in 1880.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot later this year.
Well, I think the limnologists at the UW Limnology Center are probably predicting that it's probably not going to be that many more years before we might actually find that Lake Mendota stays open year-round or only freezes over for a very short period of time.
Yeah. Stan Temple, our guest today, we're talking with him about the study of the change of the seasons, and I'm certainly great to have him with us to have a talk, too, about the phenology calendar that the Foundation puts out every year. It's a beautiful calendar, and we'll get to that. You can join in with your own questions. You have an observation or maybe a question about phenology? I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we do have Louise from Richland Center online, so let's go there. Louise, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. We put out food for birds and squirrels, and so with that, in our residential neighborhood, we oftentimes see deer too, very early in the morning. And just in recent months, we've been noticing that there's one deer that's really small. It seems like it's not old enough for this time of year. In fact, my husband saw it maybe a month ago, and he thought it still had spots on it. So we're just kind of curious about this little deer and why it's not grown up yet at this time of the year. The timing seems off.
Well, you're absolutely right. The timing does seem off because spring is normally the season when fawns are being born. But I don't really have an explanation for that, except to say that the reproductive cycles for white-tailed deer, like the reproductive cycles for many wild mammals, is governed largely by photoperiod, by day length. And since day length is very consistent from year to year, it means that the schedule on which mating and birthing take place tend not to vary tremendously from year to year. There's probably a slight effect of weather. If it's colder than normal, things might be delayed a little. If it's warmer than normal, it might be advanced. But your deer sort of doesn't fit with that explanation, and I'm not really sure what might be going on.
Yeah, it might be just one of those outliers. I know Scott Craven has mentioned before, the month of May, we go from the smallest number of deer in the state to the largest number of deer in the state.
Yeah, that's right.
In the month of May.
Yeah, in fact, in just a week or two.
Yeah, but there's you know, probably a few times when that when it just doesn't happen for every deer. Yeah. Louise, interesting. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Stan Temple, our guest, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison and a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison and a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Talking with him about phenology on the show today and also the Wisconsin phenology calendar that the Aldo Leopold Foundation publishes every year. And it's always great to have him on to talk about it. And certainly, if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. Give a call. Maybe you've got an experience to share or an observation to share. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call from Bob in Lake Geneva. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Yes, well, hello. Glad to take you. You took my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I just have a comment that's, I think, directly related to the question as much as anything else, direct related to what you're doing here, that they're, you know, talking about the migration of sandhill cranes from, you know, down the southern United States all the way up to Wisconsin and beyond. It's such a great phenomenon and so regular, but there was a period in the starting in the late 60s, I think, when the sandhill cranes had been so weakened by the effects of DDT that they quit making it all the way up to Wisconsin. They got as far as northern Indiana and kind of gave up there and stayed there for the winter or for the summer, I guess, and then headed further south again. After several generations of that, many generations perhaps, that we discovered how bad DDT was for the environment, and so we got out of the environment, and the sandhill cranes got strong enough, and they resumed their migration all the way up to northern Wisconsin. And I think that's one of the remarkable things about that is that how did those cranes several generations later know that when they were strong enough, they should be going up to Wisconsin. And, you know, that would have all been, you know, recorded, apparently, you know, in the timing of the cranes that you guys are tracking there.
Well, Stan, a comment.
Let me comment that this sounds like a case of fake news. I hate to put a bubble in the story, but sandhill cranes were never really affected by DDT. They feed very low on the food chain, and unlike birds of prey, they were definitely affected by DDT because they're at the very top of the food chain. Sandhill cranes weren't, but the story of sandhill cranes and their recovery is one that dates much further back. We killed sandhill cranes through the late 19th century and early 20th century. They were sold at market as a source of food, and farmers shot them because they were regarded as crop pests. But something happened in 1918, and that was we passed the Migratory Bird Treaty Act that for the first time protected migratory birds like sandhill cranes. By that time, the sandhill crane populations here in the upper Midwest in the Great Lakes states had almost disappeared. By the time Aldo Leopold was looking at sandhill cranes in the 1930s, there were just a couple of dozen pairs of cranes in Wisconsin and Michigan, and they had disappeared from all the surrounding states. But gradually, over time, they started to build up their numbers, and eventually, really by the 1960s, they had sort of reached a critical mass that allowed them to really start to increase their numbers dramatically. So what's happened with sandhill cranes over the last 50 or 60 years has been really remarkable and a conservation success story that really dates back to the passage of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and the fact that we no longer kill them faster than they could reproduce. And certainly what has now happened is that Michigan and Wisconsin, the sandhill crane populations have become so abundant that there's really not much more habitat for them to occupy here. And as a result, they are dispersing and fanning out into the surrounding states. So the fact that Indiana, for example, now has breeding sandhill cranes, much of that is due to the overspill, you might say, of birds from Michigan and Wisconsin.
Really interesting. Bob, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. I want to turn to the calendar for just a minute because talk about the genesis of the phenology calendar that the Aldo Leopold Foundation puts out, and a bit about what people can find if they get a copy.
Well, this is one of the really fun parts of my responsibilities at the Leopold Foundation as a senior fellow, is helping pull together the information for this calendar. The phenology calendar, it's essentially a calendar that month by month, day by day, alerts you to when you can expect to see certain natural events happening. And there are over 200 events that are essentially listed on the calendar. So it gives you a lot of information about when to expect the first blossoms of plants, when to expect migratory birds to arrive, when to expect animals to be reproducing, and so on. And the origins of this calendar go back to Aldo Leopold and the records that he kept, especially at the shack up in Sauk County, his weekend getaway from Madison, and also at the University of Wisconsin Arboretum, where he and his students worked. And Leopold published a paper back in 1947 that described his analysis of phenological records. And it's largely on that historical record that we started sort of building phenological records. And the Leopold Foundation has continued to collect those data right up to the present. And that gives us an amazing database from which to produce this calendar. So the calendar, as you said, Larry, it's a beautiful calendar because it features photographs by some of Wisconsin's best nature photographers, but it also has a lot of information on when you can expect things. And then every year we have a theme for the calendar, and it allows us to explore in a little more depth some particular aspect of phenology. And this year the theme was interpreting phenological records, some of the subtleties that go into figuring out the patterns, if you will, in what we're seeing happening in the natural world. So the calendar is very popular. We sell thousands of copies of it every year, and it, of course, is available now, and you can buy your calendars by simply going to aldoleopold.org, and the website has a prominent feature that allows you to order your calendars and have them mailed to you in time for the changing of the year as well as the changing of the seasons.
Yeah, and I love the photography in the the top half of the calendar is always a wonderful photo of this year quite a few birds, and that's normal. There's also a great shot of a river otter for the December month. I love that shot. So there's that, but I also, every month there, you have a little statement or a little comment that Aldo Leopold once made, probably in that particular month.
Right. For each month, I do a little, very short essay about something that's happening that month that deserves some particular explanation. But we also, month by month, include a quote from Aldo Leopold, which is very appropriate because for any of your listeners, and I hope many of them have read a Sand County Almanac, they know that the first half of that book is essentially Leopold telling stories about the phenological events that are transpiring at the shack month by month. So for every month, he has one or two essays that, sort of like my essays, month by month, describe something interesting that's happening that month. So we usually take quotes from his month by month essays to accompany the month by month calendar.
Yeah, it's great. I love your short pieces on that usually relate to, in some fashion at least, to the photo.
We try as much as we can to line up my essay with the photo. It's usually not too hard to do because, as I said, there are lots of nice photos to pick from. And as you mentioned, some of the photos are absolutely spectacular this year. We were really, really quite amazed at when we put out the call from our photographers for any images, and sometimes they turned up with some that are just spectacular. I was particularly impressed with the October photograph of a big flock of male red-winged blackbirds congregating for migration. And it's
beautiful.
It's beautiful as well as just kind of awesome to see that tightly packed flock of birds with their black and red and yellow plumage flashing.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, we should take some more calls here. George in Ogama, will give you a chance. George, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. You were talking earlier in the show about the winter weather and the summer weather and whatever. And the old way to tell what you're going to have is with the equinox winds.
Well, if you're a subscriber to the old Farmer's Almanac, there are lots of sort of folk wisdom about how you can predict what the upcoming season is going to be. Some of the ones that were always of interest to me as a wildlife biologist were the things that had to do with the behavior or even the physical appearance of animals. And certainly there are some things that are common folklore in Wisconsin that you can anticipate the severity of the coming winter by the thickness of the fur on various animals or the bushiness of the tails on squirrels, and that come springtime you can predict certain events by sort of correlating them. So morel hunters in Wisconsin get excited about looking for morels when the oak leaves are the size of squirrels' ears and so on. Most of these, if you looked at them historically over a long period of time, they probably have no better than a 50% chance of correctly predicting. But, of course, on the one on the 50% when they do hit it right, of course, everyone remembers that and thinks that that's going to be the general pattern.
George, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Jim in Stevens Point, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. If you live in central Wisconsin, there's a great place to see sandhill cranes when they congregate in the fall, the Sandhill Wildlife Refuge. Right outside of Babcock is a place I've been going for about 30 years. And during the month of October, looking at your calendar, it's certainly there. They congregate in the thousands, and it's just a wonderful place to go. My second comment is that I was listening to this show last year, and as a result, sent your calendar to all my family members, and they loved it. They thought it was just the best Christmas gift they ever got. So good luck with that.
All right.
Thank you for that endorsement. Yeah, the calendars, as I said, are extremely popular. We sell thousands of them, and obviously the popularity grows each year. And, you know, they do make a nice gift, as you said. They're only $15 and something that people will remember your gift throughout the entire year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one that once you get the calendar, I mean, it'll go up. It'll be somewhere in your office or in the maybe even stuck to the refrigerator in your kitchen. But it's certainly something that I look forward to having. I'm really glad to have the 2021 calendar already in hand. But you'll have every month something new and different and exciting to look at least from my perspective. It's a wonderful deal. What about the Sandhill viewing area that Jim mentioned? Are you familiar with it?
Well, yes. It turns out as the sandhill crane population has increased so dramatically in Wisconsin, they have established quite a few of these staging areas around the state. These are places where the birds make their preparations for the actual migration southward, which will happen sometime next month or sometimes, depending on the winter, even in January. But it's been fascinating to see that these cranes that are now, as I said, pretty much saturating the habitat in Wisconsin. So there are a lot of cranes in Wisconsin that have to find a place in the fall to do this staging prior to migration. And they look for two things, always two things. They need to have a secure place where these large congregations of birds can spend the night. And that's usually a very large wetland or islands or sandbars in a river. The second thing that they need is a very rich, abundant supply of food very nearby that site where they're going to spend the night. So the coincidence of a good place to spend the night and a good source of food, having essentially the bedroom and the kitchen nearby, is really important. And all over the state, we have these traditional staging areas that have formed with the recovery of the birds. So places like Crex Meadows in northwestern Wisconsin, along the Mississippi or along the Wisconsin River in southern Wisconsin, places like the Sandhill area in central Wisconsin, are all places where you can see thousands of birds congregating. And they've all come from fairly nearby. Most of the birds that arrive at these staging areas have only really flown for perhaps one day to reach that site. So we're very fortunate on the Wisconsin River behind the Leopold Shack that just north of us is the largest concentration of nesting sandhill cranes in Wisconsin. So we end up having some of the largest numbers of birds coming right to behind Leopold's shack, which is pretty remarkable because back in 1937, he wrote a famous essay called Marshland Elegy, in which he was anticipating that sandhill cranes were going to go extinct in Wisconsin.
Yeah, amazing. Well, Linda shot us a note to say, or phone to say, that she would like to get a calendar, but she doesn't have the internet and wonders if there's a phone number that she could use to order a copy of the calendar.
Well, if she calls the Leopold Foundation, I'm sure they would be willing to process that order. The number that she can call, I hope you're listening, is 608-355-0279.
Okay, 608-355-0279. And maybe Jill can put that up on our Larry Mueller Show website page.
And for those who do have an internet connection, you know, the website is very simple. It's aldoleopold.org.
Aldoleopold.org. Okay. So there you go. I hope you got that, Linda. Again, I'll give it once more. 608-355-0279. If you want to order by phone, I'm sure the folks there are going to be more than happy to help you out. Appreciate that. Well, Mike in Oshkosh has a comment or question. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. Great to hear your show today. I had a question about a sighting last fall. I was in the car and I was driving north. I saw a flock of geese, pretty good sized flock, and I noticed that the three geese at the front of the flock were flapping a little more slowly. Their wings were flapping more slowly than the rest of the geese. And as I got closer in the car, I realized that the first three birds were not geese. They were actually cranes, and they were leading a flock of about 25 or 30 geese. And I was curious if this was, a unique sighting, or if those birds tend to mix at times in flights like that.
Well, that was a very interesting sighting. When the cranes and geese sort of come together is in the fall, because they often share the same roosting and feeding areas. So quite often what will happen is that a flock of cranes and a flock of geese are feeding on the waste corn in a recently harvested cornfield, and they will take off at the same time to head to their nocturnal roost nearby. And at times like that, sometimes the flocks do kind of get mixed up. I'm not sure I've ever seen them actually flying in a V formation together like that, but quite often, you know, the flocks do intermingle. And a very interesting observation. I'm glad you shared that information.
Yeah, thanks. That's a cool story. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. I want to go back to the caller who had the question about the young deer in her yard that looked so small. And Kevin in Appleton called in to say, if a doe isn't bred during the rut, it can go into heat more than once, and that accounts for some fawns being born late. And I believe that is correct.
That is probably true, and it probably doesn't happen very often, but apparently it does. And, you know, as I was thinking about that call too, Larry, I think we're all familiar, especially with our domestic animals, that occasionally there's a litter that has a runt, an individual that is, for some reason, stunted, and that could be another explanation as well.
Yeah. So the calendar, once more, let's go through that once more again. We've got the phenology calendar. Tell us again about what they're going to find in the calendar.
Well, the calendar features a number of things. There's an introductory essay that talks about the science of phenology and some one particular aspect of it. This year, it's interpreting phenological records. And basically, we give you a lot of information to help you interpret what's going on in the rest of the calendar. But then month by month, for every month, there's a short essay talking about some iconic event that's happening that month. There are some photographs of some of the plants and animals that are featured each month. And then day by day, we give you information on when you can expect certain annual events to happen. It's kind of a way of anticipating when things are going to happen, so you can be on the lookout for your favorite bird or favorite plant to be doing its seasonal thing. And of course, the photographs are spectacular and sort of give the calendar a much more aesthetic as well as educational perspective.
And I do kind of like the historical part of it, too, of the calendar, to be reminded of various events or things that took place. You know, next week in 2021, we're reminded that, let's see, was it, or is it December? Yeah, I guess the Endangered Species Act was
yes.
passed in 1973. On December 28th. Well, that's kind of cool to know.
Slipped it in just at the end of the year. And, Larry, you may know that as a graduate student, I actually played a small role in the drafting of the Endangered Species Act. And we were all delighted to see that it not only passed in 1973, but I believe there were only two dissenting votes. And unfortunately, the Endangered Species Act has become a sort of a partisan issue more recently, and so we're very glad that almost all of those bedrock environmental laws were passed during an era. Clean air, clean water, the EPA, and Wilderness Act, Endangered Species Act, it goes on and on. Back then, the environment was a completely nonpartisan issue.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe someday it will become that way again.
One can always hope.
Well, Stan, it's been a pleasure again. Tell us online, how do we go? We go where to get our calendars?
You can order your calendar for $15 at aldoleopold.org and get your orders in, and we'll get those calendars mailed out to you right away so that they're available for Christmas presents, which they seem to be very popular as.
And the phone number to call if you're not online is 608-355-0279. Stan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it, and I love the 2021 calendar. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the UW-Madison. And he is a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Always fun to have Stan come by and talk about the calendar and other environmental things that happen here in Wisconsin. Always good, too, to get folks from the Department of Natural Resources on the show. And we're going to be talking with a couple of representatives from the DNR about diversifying the DNR workforce and diversifying those who spend time in the great outdoors. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.